We are super excited because today's episode is sponsored by BarkBox.
As most of you guys know, my dog Mackie is obsessed with his chew toys. You'll often hear him squeaking his toys in the background of our episodes.
It's true.
But those toys do not last long in our house because he has some tough teeth. And that's why we love our subscription service, BarkBox. We have a few of the BarkBox toys in our house, and not only does he love them, but they have lasted and none of them have gotten ripped up, which is a win.
So, BarkBox is a monthly subscription box that offers an array of themed boxes for your pup. Inside your box, you'll find toys, treats, and unleashed joy, thoughtfully designed to satisfy every dog's unique playstyle. They even have holiday themed boxes available right now during the holiday season.
BarkBox has several boxes to choose from depending on your dog's needs, such as the Super Chewer box, which was designed to challenge and engage your pup for longer lasting play, like my dog Mackie.
Right now, you can get a free extra month of BarkBox, which is up to a $35 value, by using our link www.barkbox.com/inhumanpod.
So give your dog exactly what they want this holiday season by using our link www.barkbox.com/inhumanpod for an extra free month of BarkBox. What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast.
Said we laugh too much.
Oh, I did see the review that we got that said we laugh too much. Yes. I apologize to that person. But they were pretty nice about it.
Yeah, they were.
So
yeah.
We do appreciate the constructive criticism. Yeah. But yeah, we're never laughing like at the victims or
no,
like
not
that.
At all. Not at all.
Yeah.
We just get uncomfortable, I think, sometimes and
yeah. And we're also just, like, weird, and we're just friends, so most of the time our podcast recordings are just us talking.
Right. So, like, hanging out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think that we have... There's not really any big things going on right now, true crime news-wise. And
right.
This is also going to be a long episode and case, so I think we're just going to get right into it.
Yes, let's do it.
Today, I am covering the very highly requested JonBenet Ramsey case.
Yes. We got so many requests, like, just recently for it, too. I think because, like, Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, like, Christmassy, I guess.
It is. And I think a while ago, like, when we were just starting to go into other cases over the summer, I think we had talked about doing JonBenet over Christmas time.
Yeah.
So I've had this on my list to do for a while, and this is definitely one of my top, like, I want to know what happened.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Okay. So we're just going to get into it.
Yeah. You guys probably know it, but, you know, it's something that I think people always want to discuss and are very vocal about their opinions on it. So we did not share our theories on what we think happened, so I'm very, not excited, but, like, you know, enthusiastic to hear your take on the case and to hear your theory. So.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear yours, too, because, like you said, I feel like a lot of people have, and I don't think we've ever talked about this case with each other, so
I don't really know,
like, what you think about it at all, and we probably, I'm going to say this from now, this is going to be a two-parter, because there's a lot, and I wanted to really dive into all of the theories that have developed over the years, so we probably won't share what we think happened directly in this episode, but we definitely will be talking about that in part two. And, I mean, the other thing is I've never, like, full-on dove into research on this case until now, and there's so many sources out there and documentaries, and like things seem to always be coming out, especially now that true crime is kind of becoming a bigger thing. More people are talking about it and posting about it and all of that. So there's a lot on this case, and I'm excited to be able to put it all into, you know, two hopefully nicely packaged episodes and kind of have everything that we know as of, you know, December 2021 in one place.
Yeah, it's such a sad case. And actually, like, I remember when this happened, like, I was alive, obviously, and a person, you know, existing in the world. And I do remember, like, when this case unfolded and just how sad and tragic it was, like, even as a kid.
Yeah, I was not alive. I was less than a month away from being alive, but I was not alive yet. So I didn't learn about this until I really got into true crime. But this year is the 25th anniversary of when it happened. So I think that that's why there's also been some more recent things popping up. And yeah, there's just a lot. So yeah, we'll just get into it.
Let's do it.
All right. And when I say that I dove deep, I dove deep. So even with the like background and stuff. So we're going to start with the background of JonBenet's parents.
Okay.
John Bennett Ramsey was born on December 7th, 1943 in Lincoln, Nebraska to Mary Jane and James Dudley J. Ramsey. In 1966, John graduated from Michigan State University with a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. And then in 1971, he graduated again from MSU with a master's degree in business administration. John's father was a decorated World War II pilot, and in 1966, John actually began serving as a civil engineer corps officer in the Navy. So he was in the Philippines for 3 years, and then he was in Atlanta, Georgia, serving for 8 years. Also in 1966, John married a woman named Lucinda Pash, and they had 3 children together, but the couple got divorced in 1978. On November 5th, 1980, John Ramsey married his second wife, Patricia Ramsey. So Patricia, or Patsy, as she was often called, was born in Parkersburg, West Virginia on December 29th, 1956. She was born to Nedra Ellen Ann and Donald Ray Poe, and in 1978, she graduated from West Virginia University with a bachelor's degree in journalism.
Okay.
And she was actually into pageants. So something that a lot of people find really intriguing about this case is how JonBenet was in pageants. And this came from her mother's, you know, desire to do that because she was in pageants when she was younger. And the year before she graduated from college, she actually won the Miss West Virginia beauty title.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew she was into pageants, but I didn't know she actually was, like, that deep into it.
Yeah, and then her sister also was into it. You know, it seemed like kind of her whole family was. And her sister, at age 24, won the Miss South Charleston title. So, you know, it was definitely a family thing. She had done it before. It wasn't like she just randomly decided to put JonBenet into pageants.
Right. So she was like, I think everyone kind of says she was kind of living vicariously through her daughter, which I think a lot of parents do. And that's okay, as long as you don't take it, you know.
Yeah.
Too crazy.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people do that with all different kinds of sports and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this a little bit more in a hot second. But it does seem like JonBenet actually did enjoy the pageants and she did want to do it.
Yeah.
So Patsy was 23 years old when she married John Ramsey in 1980, and the couple were living in Atlanta, Georgia, where John was working. On January 27th, 1987, John and Patsy had their first child, Burke Ramsey, and 3 years later, their daughter was born. So JonBenet Ramsey was born on August 6th, 1990 in Atlanta. And as I'm sure you can tell, JonBenet's name is a combination of her father's first and middle names, which were John Bennett. And then JonBenet's middle name is actually Patricia, after her mother. It's just so interesting. Such an interesting name.
Yeah, I always thought so too. And it's like, Didn't they technically pronounce her first name as Jean, like it's French?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So interesting.
I know. So in 1991, the family moved from Georgia to Boulder, Colorado for John Ramsey's job. In 1989, he had formed the Advanced Product Group, which later merged with two other companies to become Access Graphics, which is a computer services company that was a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin, which, if you don't know what that is, it's an aerospace, arms and defense, information security corp. And so this company that was kind of formed by John Ramsey was a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin.
Okay.
Eventually, John actually became president and CEO of Access Graphics. And in the year 1996, Access Graphics grossed over $1 billion. So wow. It was doing really well. And John Ramsey was named Entrepreneur of the Year by the Boulder Chamber of Commerce that year.
Wow.
And there had actually been an article published about a week before Christmas stating this, that the company had done $1 billion for the year. So it definitely was well known that the Ramsey family was well off.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, Patsy Ramsey had participated in beauty pageants in her younger life, and so she started entering her daughter in these contests when she was young. And JonBenet actually won some titles before the age of six. And I watched a Discovery Plus documentary about this case, and JonBenet's father, John, was interviewed in it. And he shared in that documentary that JonBenet really did love doing these pageants and that she'd be the one dragging her mom to them. And I think a lot of people believe that Patsy was like forcing JonBenet to do these pageants. And I mean, I'm sure JonBenet wasn't always super excited to do stuff as kids are, but it does seem like she was wanting to do the pageants. John also shared a specific memory that happened not long before JonBenet was murdered, and I want to share it here because it melted my heart. So John said that he had always told her that what truly mattered in the contest was her talent, not, you know, how she looked. And so in this one pageant, she performed and she won Best Talent. And after she won, I guess she ran up to her dad and said, "Dad, I won this for you," and put the medal around his neck.
Aw, that's so sweet. I know. That's so sad, though.
So it's just, I know. So in December 1996, JonBenet was 6 years old and living with her family in Boulder. On December 25th, JonBenet received a bike for Christmas, and then that evening, the family went to a Christmas party hosted by a family friend named Fleet White. After the Christmas party, the family returned home, and JonBenet went to bed. At 5:30 a.m. on December 26th, Patsy Ramsey woke up and began making her coffee. And on the stairs in the back part of the house that led down to the kitchen, Patsy found a note, and this was a ransom note that claimed that JonBenet had been kidnapped. So this note was handwritten, and it was about 2.5 pages long, and I'll go more into depth about this note later on, but it demanded that John Ramsey pay $118,000 in ransom to return JonBenet, and it said specifically that they should withdraw $100,000 in $100 bills and then $18,000 in $20 bills. And then the note also said, don't call police and all of that. Like I said, I'll go way more in depth on the note in a little bit.
Okay.
But basically, it's a ransom note. They're requesting money and saying, don't call the police.
I'm very specific.
Yes. So even though the note said not to call the police, at 5:52 a.m., Patsy called 911, which, like, I would do that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before 6 a.m. that morning, police officer Rick French arrived at the home, and he began to do a basic search of the house. And he said that he found no sign of forced entry. And actually, during this search, he was down in the basement, and he came up to a door that was secured by a wooden latch. And he later explained that at the time, he was just looking for an exit route that could be used by a kidnapper because they're trying to figure out, you know, how did this kidnapper get out? Because then maybe they could find evidence or something like that. So this particular door was closed by a peg inside the house. So for him, he was like, well, that the kidnapper couldn't have gotten out from that door because it was closed from inside the house. So that ruled that door out for him, and he walked away. But just keep that door in mind.
Yeah.
Family, friends, victim advocates, and the family's minister began arriving at the house, and police did cordon off JonBenet's bedroom to prevent any evidence contamination. But, you know, at that time, it was believed that she had been kidnapped, so no other part of the house was blocked off. And there were up to 18 people that had come into the house that day, and they were pretty much allowed to roam wherever.
I always thought that was so crazy because, I mean, it's the mid-90s, late 90s, whatever. And, yeah. I mean, by that time, there's the protocol of, like, keep the crime scene sealed and...
Yeah. I go back and forth on this because at the time, they just think that this little girl was kidnapped. So, like, they block off her bedroom because they're like, okay, well, clearly they would have had to go into the bedroom.
Right.
And they couldn't find a specific exit route or something because they probably would have blocked that off if they did. You know, they probably should have blocked off, like, the doors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, being in the kitchen or something or in the living room sitting down wouldn't necessarily seem like a big deal at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, I see where your thought process is. I just feel like you're adding in so much extra DNA that doesn't need to be there, even for a kidnapping case, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think you know, at the time, they're just like, holy shit, this little girl's missing. We need to find her.
Get everyone on deck, yeah.
Yeah.
I get that, too.
So, you know, that'll obviously become important later, and, you know, most people know this case, so you know why, but we'll get into that. So John Ramsey began making arrangements to be able to pay the ransom, and one of the other things that the note mentioned was that at some point between 8 and 10 a.m., the kidnappers would call to give instructions. So at 8 o'clock a.m., Boulder Detective Linda Arndt, I think that's how you say it, it's spelled A-R-N-D-T.
That sounds right. Arndt.
I did my best there. Yeah. So she arrived at the Ramsey's house, you know, in anticipation that this phone call would come and they would get more directions. However, no contact from the kidnappers ever came, and no one ever attempted to claim the money. Also to be noted, a couple hours after the police arrived, Burke Ramsey awoke. His parents claimed that he had gone to bed and slept through the night until that morning. And it was, you know, he didn't wake up right away. It was a little bit after all these people had arrived.
Because he would have been, like, what, 8 or 9?
Yeah, he was, like, 3-ish years older. So, yeah. So, by the afternoon, tensions were high because there was no progress in finding where JonBenet was. So, Detective Arndt asked John Ramsey and Fleet White, who was the family friend who was there with them that day, to search the house to see if, quote, anything seemed amiss. So they went down to the basement to begin their search, and John opened that latched door that Officer French had stopped at earlier that day.
Right.
And when he opened the door, he found JonBenet's body. Her torso was covered by a white blanket, and he could see that her mouth was covered with duct tape, and there was a nylon cord around her wrists. In that Discovery Plus documentary, John said that at first he was relieved to see his daughter because he didn't, you know what was going on. He was like, oh my gosh, thank God, JonBenet, here you are. So he said he immediately ripped the tape off of her mouth and tried to untie her wrist, but it was too tight. So he picked up JonBenet's body and ran upstairs screaming. He said once he laid her back down upstairs, they realized that she was not alive. And this movement of the body definitely contaminated the crime scene more. But again, I don't blame him because that's what I would do. I also, you know, there's a lot of talk about if that officer would have just opened that door. But I don't blame him either because it's like you're just searching. I mean, maybe, yes, you probably should have opened the door. But he explained that he was searching for an exit route. He wasn't searching for JonBenet. So, like, you see an interior, like, closet door, you probably won't think to open it. you know, you're checking like windows and doors that lead to the outside. So I don't blame him. You know, of course, everybody wishes that he would have opened that door, but he didn't. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that in that initial search. So after JonBenet's body was found, the Ramseys were very cooperative.
Okay.
They each provided handwriting, blood, and hair samples. The parents were interviewed for more than 2 hours, and Burke, JonBenet's older brother, was also interviewed in the weeks after she disappeared. Or was murdered, I guess, at this point. On December 29th, just 3 days after the murder, the Ramseys flew to their former hometown of Atlanta, and on December 31st, a funeral for JonBenet was held at the family's old church in Georgia. JonBenet was laid to rest in Marietta, Georgia, and she was buried next to her older half-sister Elizabeth, who had died in a tragic car accident in 1992. All right, so I'm going to take a little, like, break from kind of the timeline of the case and go through the autopsy and what it showed, and then we'll keep going through, you know, more of the investigation. So the autopsy of JonBenet's body revealed that she had been killed by strangulation and a skull fracture. So her official cause of death was listed as asphyxia by strangulation associated with craniocerebral trauma. And her manner of death was ruled as a homicide. And just a trigger warning here, I'm going to share what they found in regards to sexual assault. So if you don't want to hear that, I'd skip ahead like 60 seconds. So there was no semen or anything, you know, any signs of conventional rape found in the autopsy, but sexual assault could not be fully ruled out. There was evidence of vaginal injury, and the pathologist recorded that it appeared that the vaginal area had been wiped with a cloth. And we'll talk a little bit more about the evidence and stuff in part two, but that was kind of the finding of the autopsy. As I mentioned earlier, a nylon cord was found around JonBenet's neck. This was determined to be a garrote made from a nylon cord and the broken handle of a paintbrush. And this was what was apparently used to strangle and kill her. Part of the bristle end of the paintbrush was later found in a tub containing Patsy's art supplies. And the bottom third of the paintbrush, like the part that was broken off, has never been found despite an extensive search of the house.
Okay. So it was a pretty large paintbrush.
Yeah, it was a pretty large paintbrush, and it sounds like there was a part of the handle that was broken off.
Okay.
And that's what was kind of used to make the garrote.
Right.
The autopsy also revealed that, quote, a vegetable or fruit material that may represent pineapple was found in JonBenet's stomach. And this indicated that she had eaten it a few hours before her death. Some photographs of the home that were taken on December 26th, the day that she disappeared and was found, those photos showed a bowl of pineapple on the kitchen table with a spoon in it, but John and Patsy said that they never put the bowl there, or they never remember feeding pineapple to JonBenet. And police later reported that they found Burke's fingerprints on that bowl of pineapple. So, again, we will go more into that. That will definitely come up in, like, some of the theories and evidence and stuff. But
right.
I just wanted to kind of state what was found right now.
Right.
Okay, so on January 1st, 1997, John and Patsy gave a 45-minute long interview to CNN from Atlanta, where they were staying with family. At this point, the Boulder police had been assuring the community that there wasn't, like, a murderer on the run. But during that interview, Patsy said, quote, "There is a killer on the loose. If I were a resident of Boulder, I would tell my friends to keep your babies close to you. There's someone out there." So, you know.
Differing reports there.
Yeah. And a lot of people take a lot from that, but also this is a grieving mother. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
She also said during the interview that, quote, "We are a Christian, God-fearing family. We love our children. We would do anything for our children." And police said that they were kind of surprised that the Ramseys did this interview because the Ramseys had claimed to the police that they were too emotional to talk to them. So when they saw that they did not only an interview, but a 45-minute long interview, they were kind of like, okay, yeah. That's kind of weird.
On CNN, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if they maybe did like a quick press conference or like news appearance to get the word out there, that's one thing. But doing a whole right. long interview, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
On January 3rd, John and Patsy returned to Boulder. And this same day, Boulder police also headed to Michigan to search through the family's summer home there.
Okay.
And this is when more information about the ransom note started to come out. So we're going to dive into that now. Detectives determined that the ransom note was written on a paper pad from inside the house. So with this, they determined it was likely written after the murder took place.
Mm-hmm.
They also revealed that there was reportedly evidence that the person who wrote the ransom note had first practiced on another piece of paper. So, this is where things start to get
fishy.
Interesting. Yes.
Fishy, fishy, fishy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned earlier, the note was 2.5 pages long. I will post photos of it on our Instagram so you can see it for yourself. But it's handwritten, very long note. And it starts out, "Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully, ! After the listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign fraction. Faction? I think I typed fraction, but it's supposed to be faction.
It's faction, yeah.
Yeah. We respect your business, but not the country that it services. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000, and the way that this is written out is the numbers, but then it has, like, and 0 cents. Like, it's, like, 118,000.00.
Yeah.
Seem like that's just really weird to me.
Yeah.
So it says, you will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 will be in $20 bills. So just very specific instructions of how to withdraw the money.
Right.
And the dollar amount requested was also very specific.
Yeah.
John pointed out to police on the scene on December 26th that the amount was nearly identical to the amount he had received for a Christmas bonus the prior year. So this obviously seemed odd. And, you know, it's not like this was a round number, like 100,000 or 200,000. That wouldn't be as coincidental. But
right.
118,000 is very specific.
Yeah, or even like 125,000, you know?
Yeah.
Like 118 is just so random.
Yeah. And so investigators did look into employees that worked at Access Graphics that may have known John's bonus, but they never really found much. But that was something that they considered because of that specific amount.
Okay.
The note kind of had things crossed out and inserted with, you know, those like little editing carrots that you put a little carrot and then write above it what you want to add.
Yeah.
It had that, which to me, that's just like really weird because if you're like, who cares about like grammar and proper editing if you're like writing a ransom note, but.
In the house after you killed a little girl? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
The note mainly went on warning the Ramseys to not contact police, to not mark the money, and they basically kept saying, if you do anything that we tell you not to do, then JonBenet will be killed. Towards the end, it says, quote, don't try to grow a brain, John. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours.
Wow.
So, and it's like referencing John specifically. It's not like...
to the parents...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And throughout it, they're saying John. And another thing that I found interesting was that it claimed that like it was a group of kidnappers, but then at one point it said I mm-hmm. will like something something, and then later on it said we will. So it just was very inconsistent.
Yeah.
The last line is, it is up to you now, John! ! And then it's signed Victory! ! SBTC. And from what I could find, they never determined what that meant.
I mean, I don't know. It's obviously an acronym for something, but... And was he supposed to know? Like,
I have no clue, but I couldn't find what that signature meant.
Yeah.
So just very bizarre, you know, the exclamation points, the signature, and police and experts pointed out how long it was for a kidnapping ransom note. You know, we've touched on this, but especially considering that they determined it was written inside the home.
Right.
You think that the kidnappers would want to just get out and, you know, write it as quickly as possible and get out. And experts actually say that kidnappers typically write ransom notes ahead of time. So it being written in the house, and then not just that, but there was a draft or like a, you know, first attempt that was done.
Yeah. Very sus. So. Very sus.
The only fingerprints that were found on the note were Patsy's and the authorities who had handled it, you know, before it became like murder evidence when she was missing. But there were no other fingerprints or any other like DNA or anything found on the note. So there's been a bunch of different analysis done the way the letter was written. One that I found and that I find really interesting is looking at the way that a couple of specific letters were written. So this, you know, analysis that I looked at, and this will be linked in our sources for the episodes on our website, but the A's and the T's seem to change throughout the note. So, you know, there's a million ways to write an A, the normal like circle with a line, the one that kind of does the like top thing. There's different ways to write A's. And throughout the note, it's all kind of the A with the top thing, but it changes.
Right.
And same with the T's. Some of them are just a straight line. Some of them have a little curve at the bottom. I'm like drawing this out in the air, but you guys can't see me. But hopefully you can picture that.
Right.
And, you know, I know that people's handwriting isn't always like completely consistent. It can change as you write things and, you know, the way you're holding the pen, if your hand hurts, whatever.
But usually those kind of things, you stick with a certain...
Yeah, and it wasn't a...
style.
You know, you're not, like, writing a T with a straight line and then switch it to a curved line.
Right.
You know, and I, like, I change my handwriting depending on, like, what I'm writing, but it didn't seem like this was a purposeful change. It seemed like it was just, like, whoever was writing it was not able to stay...
Like they forgot consistent. What they were doing. They got distracted or whatever.
And like the pen pressure looked different and all of that. So it just definitely, to me, seems like somebody was purposefully trying to write not like their own handwriting.
Mask their handwriting, yeah.
Yeah. So John Ramsey in the Discovery Plus documentary claims that the family has done multiple handwriting tests, including having to rewrite that entire note out multiple times, which can, you know, you can imagine that's just got to be traumatizing for them.
Right.
In March 1997, an official handwriting analysis was done and it was able to rule out John as the author of the note. They were able to say this was not John. But they were not able to rule out Patsy, saying that there is a chance that she could have written the note. So here's the thing. There's kind of, in the Discovery Plus documentary, they were explaining this, and there's basically a scale from 1 to 5. And 5 means, I can't, 5 would mean, hold on, let me think about this, because I didn't write this down, but I want to share it. So I think... 5 would mean a complete fail, like you definitely...
Don't match with that handwriting.
No, opposite. 5 is like you definitely match. 1 is like you don't match at all.
Okay.
And Patsy consistently scored between a 4 and a 4.5. So it wasn't fully you don't match, or you match, but it also wasn't like you don't match. So they couldn't say either
conclusively
way.
Like yeah or no. Yeah.
And many police and detectives from the start believed that Patsy is the one who wrote the note. And a Colorado Bureau of Investigation report specifically said that there are indications that the author of the note was Patsy. but there has never been any definitive evidence to link her or say that, like, for sure she is the one that wrote the note.
Right.
And a federal court actually ruled it highly unlikely that Patsy wrote the note. But there's a lot of controversy about these rulings because handwriting analysis is kind of a subjective science. You know, unfortunately, right. There's not... I mean, nowadays, there is more so with computers and stuff.
Yeah.
But even that, if the person that wrote it was purposefully trying to alter their handwriting, then you wouldn't ever be able to match it. But we don't know. It's never been definitively proven one way or another. She's never been fully ruled out, but it's also never been definitively proven that it was her that wrote it. So you might be able to kind of tell what Andrea and I think based on our reaction.
I'm trying so hard not to be like,
Yeah.
You know, but... Because I don't... Wait, I mean, no one really knows.
No one really knows. But that is where we are going to stop for part one. In part two, we're going to get into more of the investigation and dive deep into the theories surrounding this case. And there are many.
So many.
And so many that seem viable, too. Like, yeah. I feel like... I mean, I have my theory that I kind of, as I've done more research, am stuck to that one. But I will say there are
teeter, right?
Yeah.
I especially like, and I won't go into any detail, but something a few years ago, it's probably been like five, I don't even know how many years now, but was brought to my attention. And I was like, you know what? Matter of fact, that kind of makes sense too.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like if you watch like documentaries on this and stuff, I mean, those are very subjective and can definitely sway you one way or another.
Yeah.
And that definitely happened to me when I watched the Discovery Plus. Like, I was already kind of leaning one way, but this kind of helped formulate my theory just watching that. And you do have to be careful because, like we've talked about, the Madeleine McCann documentary totally made me think it was the parents. And then when I did research, I was like, okay, I don't think it's the parents.
Right.
So you have to be careful. But that's why we're going to dive into all of the evidence. And, you know, there was some, I think in, I want to say 2003, there was some blood evidence they were able to look at. And it's changed over the last 25 years.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of interesting stuff. And I am excited to dive into the theories with you guys on Thursday. And I definitely want to hear your guys' thoughts as well. So be sure to follow us on Instagram so that you can put your thoughts down.
Right.
And post about it. We might even put like a question box on our stories of like, what do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. After we post Thursday's episode, because I want to know.
I'd love to know what people think.
Yeah. We can do like polls and stuff like that. And then also we have a Facebook group where there's kind of more ability to discuss and stuff. So that is Inhuman, a true crime podcast on Facebook. So you can go join there so you can let us know your guys' theories. But I am not like done diving into them and I'm already like my head is spinning. So this is pretty much gonna take over my life for the next few days. But I really want to get into all of them. And I know this episode was a little bit shorter for like a two-parter, but this was a good stopping point. I didn't want to like stop it at a weird point.
Right.
Just to make it longer. So part two will probably be longer.
Right.
But, you know, so just get ready for that. It's a crazy one.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so, so much for listening. If you guys haven't already left a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, if that's where you're listening, please be sure to do that. I also saw a thing come through from Spotify that they are going to be doing ratings and reviews soon.
Yeah.
So if you're listening on Spotify and you see that come up, go ahead and leave us a rating. We'd love it. You know, it really, whenever you guys do stuff like that and whenever you listen and download our episodes and all of that, it just helps us get out to more people because it shows the platform that you're listening on that people like our content. And so it helps get us out to more people. So we appreciate you guys. We appreciate our listeners. We hope that you're having a wonderful holiday season.
Yep, whatever you celebrate.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening and supporting us. And, you know, yep, me too, Mackie. Me too, buddy. See, Mackie's telling y'all thank you.
Yeah, Mackie says thank you for listening so my mom can buy me more Treatos. Yep. That's what that was. That's so funny because we recorded a BarkBox ad and Mackie, we were talking about how Mackie often barks in my videos. So there you go. Or not my videos, my podcast recording. Yeah. I'm doing too much, man. I'm doing too much.
Yeah, you got a lot on your plate right now.
That's okay. Yeah. I love doing this. I love you guys. We love you guys
so much.
And we will see you guys on Thursday with part two. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.